The news we hear, for the most part, is not news to our genius. It is the stalest repetition. Henry David Thoreau. Maybe it's just me, but I've been observing an increase in hopelessness in my environment, both online and offline. I've noticed a lot of negativity about the future, whether it concerns geopolitical events or the emergence of artificial intelligence. I get it. The world was already changing rapidly last century, but the pace of development today seems to have increased exponentially. When we switch on our televisions, laptops and phones, we're bombarded with breaking news, opinion articles and analyses. And most of it just adds to the overall bleakness portrayed by the media. I don't want to delve into the details now, but there's an endless stream of information about political unrest, immigration, left versus right, and global conflict. If you're like most people, just noticing this endless stream of information will not leave you unaffected. It may influence your political views, sometimes pushing them toward the extreme. It can directly influence daily decisions, such as panic buying a year's worth of toilet paper during a pandemic, or abandoning travel plans. But it could also profoundly alter your mood. And to be honest, I'm not resistant to that either. Not too long ago, I experienced a period during which I let myself tumble into the dark rabbit hole of whatever constitutes the news. I was watching the news more often than usual, following all kinds of channels that put out multiple videos a day talking about the latest developments on the world stage, under the guise of fighting for democracy or spreading the real message. However, I soon realized that the more I watch this type of content, the worse I feel. Sure, some things cheer me up, others entertain me, but it's just a matter of time before I stumble upon something that affects my mood negatively. The exposure to doom and gloom just makes me worry more than if I were to abstain from the news. And the more I get sucked in, the more bleak my outlook on the world becomes. It's really that simple, and I don't think I'm the only one. Funny enough, but certainly by design, is that as soon as you watch a couple of videos on YouTube or click on a couple of social media posts, the algorithm knows precisely what you're looking for. It seeks to accomplish one thing, the highest possible amount of clicks, which leads to more views and watch time, ultimately resulting in more money from advertisers. So from the moment you jump on a train of rage bait and gloominess, it's tricky to get off. Hence, I concluded that my relationship with the news, and therefore my relationship with the world and life in general, had become problematic. And that I had to do something about my bleak outlook on life, which had crept up on me so unnoticed. So I asked myself, how can I worry less about all the gloomy things we hear on the news? How can I cope with all the bad stuff that seems to be happening around me? How could I enjoy life when everything just seems to be falling apart these days? There's a lot of wisdom and practical advice available to deal with this. In my opinion, human tendency to be overly concerned with the negative aspects of life. In this guide, I would like to share what I found and what helps me. Hopefully, it also benefits you if you're worrying about today's troubling times, just as I did. My name is Stefan. This is not an AI voice. I'm a real person. I just wanted to make that clear. And follow me on Substack to stay updated about all my work. I hope you'll enjoy this video. One of the books I read a couple of times on my expedition out of the news rabbit hole was a short book by Rolf Dobelli named Stop Reading the News, which he describes as a manifesto for a happier, calmer, and wiser life. Quite controversially, Dobelli advocates for a life without reading or watching the news altogether. Now, many would consider a total avoidance of news to be irresponsible. After all, as responsible citizens, aren't we supposed to be up to date about what's happening in our environment, so that we can act in the best interest of our communities? For example, aren't we supposed to stay updated about a spreading epidemic so we know what precautions to take? Surprisingly, Dobelli argues against this reasoning. First of all, he believes that most of the news is totally irrelevant to our lives. Think about it. Do you really need to know about a flood in Bangladesh if you're living in some mountain village in Switzerland? How does this information directly influence your life? Most likely, it doesn't. Well, you might ask, if you want to donate money to help the victims, isn't it crucial to know about what's happening in the first place? And don't we get that information from the news? Well, you don't have to watch or read the news to donate to good causes and to update yourself about current disasters. Most aid organizations have a website showcasing the causes they support, which you can check if you're interested in donating. Chances are, their information is much more reliable and in-depth than what they tell you on the news. Dobelli isn't the only one who observed the uselessness of the news. You may have heard of the philosopher Henry David Thoreau, who spent a period of his life living in a cabin in the woods. Thoreau wasn't a big fan of the news, as he saw it as a major distraction from what he truly deemed important, a close relationship with nature, one's direct environment, and God. He felt that the things people read in newspapers every day were repetitive. It's always the same stuff. For example, if you've read about one or two robberies, one or two shootings, haven't you read about all of them? Why do you need to know about every single one? And why do we need to stay updated about every single one of them happening in areas where we never go or live? So when Thoreau discusses the repetitive nature of the news, I can see where he's coming from. In terms of knowledge, does the news actually bring something new? Does watching the news give us profound insights? Does it expand our horizons? Or is it just repetitive, superficial drivel that's unnecessary for us to function in our daily lives? Is the news, whether we get it from newspapers, television, social media, or YouTube videos, closer to knowledge or closer to noise? Thoreau went a step further and called it gossip, saying that those who read it are old women over their tea. Although I must say, old men over their coffee or beer can be just as caught up in the gossip we call news. If we examine most of the so-called breaking news, related to global events, for example, we can also spot a pattern of repetition. It's always the same thing. World leaders clashing, protests over failed policies, the threat of global war, unrest in the Middle East, tensions between Russia and America, frictions between North Korea and Japan, an earthquake here, a tsunami there. I'm not saying that these events don't matter at all, but how does exposing ourselves daily to repetitive information about them benefit our lives? Suppose you're living in a mid-sized city in the Netherlands, like I am. Yesterday, two illegal immigrants robbed a grocery store in Sweden. Today, there's a protest in London. And tomorrow, Putin has a meeting with Xi Jinping. Apologies for my pronunciation. Is there anything I could do with that information that benefits my daily activities? And what can we do about these global events anyway? Do we gain any degree of control over events by constantly reading about them or watching them unfold on a screen? If anything, we gain worry and gloominess. Moreover, we begin to see the world as a place entirely subdued by adversity, where every corner seems like a battlefield, every headline a disaster, and every day another step toward collapse. After examining the uselessness of news, let's consider its reliability. I I don't remember a lot from what I learned in high school, but there's one specific lesson from social studies class that I vividly recall. Our teacher was explaining the mechanics of the media and coined the term selective perception. He explained that from all the newsworthy things that happen in the world, there's only a small percentage that make the news. There is a selection made by the media containing a minuscule part of actual events, which is then magnified, often in larger than life proportions. This means that what we see in the daily news is not quite representative of what's happening in the world as a whole. This may come as a shock to some, as they believe that watching the news allows them to stay updated about what's happening in the world. But in reality, they consume a carefully curated stream of events. And those who select these events usually don't have the intention to provide us with an unbiased, objective, and representative overview of daily affairs. Most, if not all, news outlets, including independent YouTube influencers, are driven by monetary gain. They want views, clicks, and sales. The classic "Amusing Ourselves to Death" by Neil Postman presents a compelling argument suggesting that since the advent of television, public discourse has shifted from rational, in-depth, and argumentative to being driven by entertainment. By watching the news on TV, or, like many do today, on social media, we think we're well informed, but we're actually just being entertained. Few people today are willing to seek information in reliable, well-researched sources, such as peer-reviewed articles and books. Instead, they form opinions based on a TikTok reel and shape their worldviews based on some influencer wearing a beanie yelling into a microphone. Nothing wrong with beanies, by the way. As people's attention spans become increasingly shorter, the demand for entertainment within news outlets increases. And thus, to maintain their audiences, news outlets, including written media online and offline, must cater to the needs of their viewers. And what do these viewers want? They want to be entertained. Failing to do so results in viewers clicking away and seeking something more appealing. Hence, the more polarizing, the more dramatic and gloom-mongering, the more clicks it gets. This, of course, happens at the cost of well-researched, in-depth, balanced pieces of information. And we should not overlook the fact that the vast majority of news is bad news. Humans seem inclined, possibly out of a survival instinct, to respond more strongly to bad news than good news. Hence, good news, such as the artificial reefs forming around the windmills in the North Sea, or the fact that Dutch streets are far safer today than in the past decades, or that immigrants in the Netherlands are doing better and better in higher education, doesn't really sell. So we're dealing with a publication bias. Bad news, frequent misinformation, and a vicious denial of fact dominate our media because it sells. And this is a very dangerous thing. Considering selective perception, profit motives, the entertainment factor, and publication bias, what can be said about the reliability of the news? Suppose you want to stay informed about our planet. How reliable are news outlets in providing an objective and representative view of the world? Philosopher Arthur Schopenhauer, known for his rather pessimistic views on humanity, pretty much hits the nail on the head when he called exaggeration of every kind essential to journalism, just as it is to the dramatic arts. And I quote, "For the object of journalism is to make events go as far as possible. Thus it is that all journalists are, in the very nature of their calling, alarmists. And this is their way of giving interest to what they write. Herein, they are like little dogs. If anything stirs, they immediately set up a shrill bark." End quote. We just have to scroll through the collections of popular news channels on YouTube to see that almost every video title and thumbnail has this deeply alarmist feel to it. It's the exaggeration of every kind that Schopenhauer talks about. Little dogs that bark at anything that stirs. Aren't such pieces of so-called news closer to the dramatic arts than reliable, balanced information? However, that doesn't mean that nothing bad ever happens in the world, or that we should deny the existence of specific issues or adversity in general. Unfortunately, bad things do indeed happen, but most likely it's not all horrible, as we get that impression if we expose ourselves to the news. So, let's suppose you reduce your news consumption. Does that mean that all troubles are gone? Of course not. The world keeps spinning. Bad things keep happening. The future remains uncertain. And destructive global conflicts are still very much possible. If that bothers you, and this not knowing and lack of control evokes a sense of anxiety, keep watching. While immersing ourselves in doom and gloom skews our worldviews, denying adversity altogether is just another illusion. The former likely results in anxiety and despair, or even anger and, in some cases, becoming prone to radicalization. The latter leads to the inevitable rude awakening, a painful collision with reality. What I'm trying to say is that adversity is a part of life. There have always been conflicts between groups of people, countries, and empires. Racism and xenophobia are probably as old as the dawn of time. So are corruption, injustice, theft, inequality, and epidemics. So are people who misbehave and are disrespectful, greedy, selfish, and uncaring for their environment. For a significant part, humanity just sucks. And as long as humanity sucks, bad things happen in the world. And even if humanity were flawless, the many natural disasters and illnesses would still befall us. Yet many people try to fight the world. They fight against the misfortunes that are so inherent to the human condition. They strongly wish for a world without injustice, without inequality, without anger and violence, where everyone is happy, where bad people don't exist. But despite their idealism, they're confronted daily with a world that doesn't quite meet their criteria, especially if they watch the news. The mismatch between a desired outcome and reality is where feelings of discontent come from. For example, harboring a hatred of immigrants, yet still encountering immigrants during one's way to the supermarket. Or being deeply averse to a specific politician, yet seeing his face on TV every day. Such attitudes, whether justified or not, lead to profound personal misery. Stoic philosopher Seneca repeatedly stated that we can't control fortune, meaning the fickleness of fate. We just have no say in how things work out. We don't even control the events occurring in our personal lives, let alone on the world stage. By worrying about troubling events, we worry about things that ultimately aren't within our control. We are emotionally affected by these events because, to some degree, we allow our mental states to depend on them. If we weren't emotionally invested in these events, we wouldn't worry about them. We wouldn't experience anxiety and other negative emotions. One of the primary tenets of Stoicism is to build fortitude against things beyond our control. So instead of wishing unfortunate events not to occur and getting upset about them and looking for a solution in the outside world by somehow changing it, we look for the solution within because, as the Stoics remind us, it is the only place it can be found. So the Stoics provide us with good and bad news, pun intended. The bad news is that we'll always be vulnerable to the whims of fortune. The fire of war, for instance, could very well occur at your doorstep. A deadly illness could strike you at any time. Your government could turn fascist if the circumstances allow it. In life, there is no safe space. We're never safe. And it's essential to accept this. And if we do, we could look at the good news. The good news is that we can find a sense of inner peace and happiness despite the inherent lack of safety. In this regard, the Stoics align with the Buddhists and the Taoists, as well as therapies such as cognitive behavioral therapy and the concept of radical acceptance from dialectical behavior therapy. All these systems, so to speak, seek the solution of suffering within. So, what practical measures can we take to worry less about the news? There are many ways and methods to buttress ourselves against the influences of the doom and gloom we see in the media. In the practical part of this video, I'll discuss a couple of actionable ideas from philosophy that I deem helpful. To worry less about the world, it's key to improve one's attitude toward it. Philosopher and psychiatrist Viktor Frankl famously wrote, "When we are no longer able to change a situation, we are challenged to change ourselves," which sums up the essence of this guide. Assuming you're not omnipotent, you cannot stop adversity from happening. To be free of suffering caused by external events, the most rational choice is to focus solely on what is within your control. Ideally, we would cultivate such a fortitude that watching the news for, let's say, 10 hours a day wouldn't affect us. But aside from the fact that watching the news 10 hours a day is a waste of time, is it even realistic to aim for such an extreme level of resilience, especially in the short term? We can't all be Buddhas within a week, and the question is, should we even be aiming for that? Let's consider a more pragmatic approach, starting with A. Reducing news intake. Remember Thoreau and Schopenhauer? They say that news is characterized by gossip, noise, drama, exaggeration, and repetition. They discouraged exposing oneself to it. Limiting my news intake significantly improved my mood, for the simple reason that, as I've noticed, a lot of news potentially has a negative impact on my mood. When I began paying closer attention, I noticed that I often transitioned from a reasonably good mood to a lesser one within minutes, simply because I came across specific content that triggered me. It was very confronting, sure, but it's true. No matter how much I want to, apparently, I'm not emotionally resistant to the news. So if you're like me, just cut back or avoid. There's nothing wrong with reducing your news intake or even eliminating it from your life, especially if it harms your emotional state. It's your right not to watch the news. Also, I would especially avoid mingling or even reading the comment sections below news videos and articles. It's a cesspool. You're often dealing with echo chambers. Those who have tried know that it's impossible to argue with these people. It's essentially a fight against an algorithm that has defined their realities, probably for a long time. Just don't do it. However, if you still want to stay updated to an extent, there are ways to do it without going on a binge. For example, you could subscribe to a weekly email containing a summary of the most important stories, which they offer at Reuters, among others. The next one is B. Acceptance. Yes, it sounds cliché, but it's essential to accept reality for what it is. It's necessary to accept that life comes as it comes, and that we don't have a say in what's coming. The world is imperfect. There is violence and injustice. Many human beings are insufferable, and most likely, this isn't going to change anytime soon. What helps me as an immediate tranquilizer when I notice some inner resistances against the state of affairs firing up is the embrace of fate. This is a method commonly used in modern Stoic circles, referred to as amor fati, the love of fate. Simply put, I choose to accept and even embrace whatever happens and will happen in the future. If this sounds silly, consider the following question. What's the point of trying to resist the inevitable? Embracing the inevitable, however, is liberating. What's to fear if we embrace anything that comes our way? This doesn't mean that we should let ourselves be trampled by everyone and everything. Welcoming fate is where it starts. Dealing with fate, when it's in front of us, is a different matter. In most cases, reality unfolds very differently from how we imagine it. I've experienced very often that a future event I've been dreading and fearing for a while turned out not to be as bad as I thought it would be. And surprisingly, I've fared pretty well in situations I initially feared. In some cases, my life has even improved in unexpected ways, in circumstances I deemed unfortunate before they actually occurred. Amor fati eases the anticipatory anxiety of whatever may happen. Instead of being afraid all the time for the next catastrophe and what this might mean for ourselves and our loved ones, we just welcome it and then deal with it in whatever shape it presents itself. Seneca summarizes this idea very well by saying, "We suffer more in imagination than in reality." The next one is C, impermanence. No matter how bleak things may seem today, nothing lasts forever. Suppose we indeed are on the verge of a global military conflict, or fascism indeed is rising in what we have considered stable democracies for years. We can't deny that things have turned this way. A change has occurred, as it always does. Given that change is the only constant, isn't it rational to believe things can change for the better? Marcus Aurelius was highly aware of the transience of things, as he often mentioned it in his meditations. He noticed that great people, such as emperors and philosophers who walked the earth, have already turned to dust, and many are long forgotten. And like the coming and ceasing of leaves, so come and cease the generations of men. The world is nothing but change, he wrote. I think it's good to remember that, for most people, the whims of the day usually prevail. We often struggle to look beyond our current concerns. Over the course of human history, there have been numerous epidemics, economic hardships, armed conflicts, tyrants, political crises, and so on. To the people involved, these moments must have been utterly significant, while at present, we probably don't even recall these events. Remember COVID? When in the midst of it, it seemed to be the crisis of our lifetime, something we would talk about for many generations to come. The news was all over it. The pandemic was all people talked about. But today, we don't hear much about it anymore. And I suspect that 20 years from now, many people will hardly remember it. Crises come and go. Regimes change. Tyrants rise and fall. Sometimes times are good. Sometimes times are bad. The Buddhists speak of the 8 worldly winds, forces of change that blow everywhere at all times. Pleasure and pain, gain and loss, praise and blame, and fame and disrepute. We cannot prevent these forces. We have no other choice but to endure them. We can either ride along or get dragged along with them. So, how about some faith? And I don't necessarily mean belief in a supreme being. I mean a rationally supported kind of faith. A faith that change will occur. A faith that, as history has shown over and over again, troubled times eventually will change for the better. And the things we hear in the daily news, no matter how alarming they may seem, will also fade into insignificance. Often, very quickly. Thank you for watching.